Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 85 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, and her life. And today, you're going to learn about why happy is the new rich. Yeah, you heard me right. But before we dive into this episode, just know it's made possible by our friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, go on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And just a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode. Rate and review us because, honey, I read these things. In my spare time, it's all about reading about you and your feedback. Love it. All right, it's time for Her.
Her. The podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind. Her body. Her life. It's all about her.
What? Happy is the new rich? What, where are the dollar signs on this one? I'm trying to understand how this whole thing works. Well, I happen to read about the wonderful work done by a wild and crazy dude. His name is George Resch, and his real name is Tank. But you're going to hear more about that. Like, where in the hell did that come from? He's a two-time Webby Award winner, an Instagram meme sensation. Tank Sinatra has written a transformational book for the ADD generation. That's about 99.9% of us out there. That might just make Napoleon Hill, the financial dude, and Dale Carnegie, the financial dude, roll over in their respective grave. Kerplunk. Kerplunk. Yeah, that was him. George shares hard-earned insights from his journey from, get this, undateable, unemployable, overweight, smoker and alcoholic, to a happily married entrepreneur, bodybuilder, and non-smoker who's been sober for 14 years. Well, I guess at the release of the book, so maybe a hell of a lot longer now. So what I love about him is he shows a complete disregard for the typical self-help conventions, right? And he loves to be able to interject humor and wordplay into everything he does. And he cuts right to the core of the issues with this collection of bit-sized inspiration. So it doesn't matter whether you feel stuck in your career, health, relationships, or life in general, his book, which is called Happy is the New Rich, and 207 Other Light Bulb Moments is what it's where it's at. So, Tank, did you like that intro? Did I do well?
Yeah, that was great. I could have almost imagined that I wrote that.
Really? No kidding. So where the hell did Tank Sinatra come? How'd you get your start with this whole thing? Because your journey is amazing. It really is.
Yeah. So Tank Sinatra is a very quick story. My name on Instagram was George Resch, and I wanted to change it to be a little bit more catchy and, you know, novelty. So I thought, I'm big, I have blue eyes. Tank Sinatra, I'm going to roll with that because of, you know, Tank because I'm like a tank, and then Sinatra because I'm like all blue eyes. I'm also from New York, but that was just an afterthought. That wasn't part of the motivation. It all happened in an instant. It wasn't like a big to do. I didn't sit down and say, oh man, what should I make my name? I didn't have a list of a bunch of potential names. It was just that, and it just fit. And it's kind of, you know, it's memorable. It's not hard to, everyone knows who Frank Sinatra is, and it's a play on words, which I love play on words.
Tell me about the journey. How in the heck did you go from, you know, unemployable and whatever, all the way over here? What was your aha moment? What was the tipping point where you said, okay, we're done with this. This is so last year. We have to change.
There were so many. It would take me forever to try and lay them all out. But basically, what happened was I started to develop some self-esteem. And then from there, that's where all the stuff sprouted from. Because I think when your self-esteem suffers or when you have low self-esteem, you don't think that you're worth eating healthy or earning money or a partner or a lover who's going to treat you right. You just think you get what you get and you don't get upset kind of a deal. Like you have a black cloud over your head, and because of that, you make poor choices. And one of them definitely affects the other. So if you have low self-esteem, you make poor choices, and then those choices lower your self-esteem. And it was only when I started to build my self-esteem by doing esteemable things that I started to say, all right, maybe I don't need to be miserable for the rest of my life. Maybe I can find somebody who's not going to drive me absolutely out of my mind. My wife is not perfect, but she's the best thing I've ever met as far as relationships goes. And I've made some poor choices in the past regards to that. And then, you know, as far as the money thing, it's like people have a certain image of themselves, and based on that, they'll choose certain jobs that pay a certain amount that will keep them feeling that way. Same thing with food. I've had a bunch of Phoenix moments where I've risen from the ashes, but I don't know if there was one aha moment where it all clicked. I will tell you that as far as success goes in business and in life, I was living in California, which is where the whole Happy is the New Rich movement was born in my mind. This was in 2008, 2009, and I was really suffering financially. Without getting into all the details, I was my years of, which I actually talk about in the book, my years of living as a quasi-adult had caught up to me. And basically, a quasi-adult is when you're still an idiot, but you have bills and responsibilities and stuff like that. So you're living like an adult, but you're not acting like an adult. And the IRS emptied out my bank account, and I had $0 and 0 cents in my bank account. I panicked, and I freaked out for a little while. But what happened was, they say that the people who think about money the most are the ones that don't have it, right? Which I think is absolutely true. And I was thinking about money a lot, and I kept saying, I need to make more money. I have to make more money right now. Like, I'm not going to make it out here. And then my next thought was, no, you need to enjoy your time out here. You're in California. You made a massive move. You took a risk. It might not work out, but at least it's working out right now. You're still alive. You have this. You have that. You don't have this. You don't have that. Like, I didn't have cancer. Like, I knew some people who were very sick. I didn't have things that would have been bad to have, and I did have things that were good to have. So I was talking to my friend Scott, and he said, which I've never heard anybody say before, but I've heard it since then. He said, dude, some people just aren't meant to have money. And I looked at him, and I said, you know what? Not me. And I remember some guy was tying his shoes in the locker room, and he looked up at me, and he was like, oh, damn. And it was like one of those moments where I just decided that I wasn't going to accept the worst of whatever the world had to offer just because I didn't feel like I was worth any more than that.
I love it. I absolutely love it. And then you started, you know, you began your, and I quote, ascent to Instagram infamy when you started putting together these memes. Where in the heck did you find them? I mean, oh my gosh. I mean, some of these are just, I can't even say them. You know what I'm saying? I'm just saying. Wow. And tell me where you created all of this. How did that happen?
So I'm a big believer in different kinds of intelligences. And I think that certain people who are really good at business might not be so good with controlling what they eat, or vice versa, or whatever. There's a bunch of different ways that people succeed and fail in their life. And the average of those is usually what determines whether or not people feel successful. And I was not so great with math and science and stuff like that, but I was really good. My emotional intelligence, I guess, was really high when I was a kid. They didn't even have a word for it yet at that point, though. So I remember taking an IQ test when I was a little boy. I must have been like 6 or 7 years old, and there was math and there was, you know, some other stuff, and I just bombed all of that. And then the teacher or the counselor or whoever it was pulled out a picture of a man and a woman in a living room, and the man was standing behind the woman with his hand on her shoulder, and he said, what's happening in this picture? And I described this big story about it. I don't remember exactly what the details were, but I remember getting really into the story, and he was like, wow, that's really detailed, and that's really in-depth. And essentially where that plays into the memes is, I mean, I know it sounds crazy to talk about this like a skill or like a gift, but I believe I'm able to look at people and kind of know what's going on, not in their minds, because the minds are hard to read, but in their heart and how they're feeling and what they potentially could be going through. I'm very good at putting myself in other people's shoes, and I have a really strong compassion and empathy for other people, especially people that are not like me at all. So the less you like me, the more I feel like I can understand what it might be like to be you. And when I look at a picture, you know, I always try and use humor to explain things or to deal with things, not like a clown, just like somebody who's always looking for the brighter side of stuff. And I think that when I look at a picture, me personally, I can caption almost any picture anytime just because I'm able to see more in the picture than the average person, if that makes sense.
So that's why the memes work so well. I mean, your first meme, the original meme, which you'll describe in a second, was shared nearly 1 million times. I mean, that's an oh wow factor there. What was that original meme?
The original meme that I made that kind of I started seeing everywhere, which was a really crazy experience for me, was it was two gerbils standing in the camera. One of them that was in the foreground, one of them was in the background, and the one in the foreground was standing there with its hands crossed, and the other one was in the back looking over the shoulder, if you can picture it. And I said something like, when you're younger and you ask when your friend asks their parents if you could sleep over their house, and you're just in the back, like, and the gerbil's looking out over the shoulder. Because I remember doing that as a little kid. I remember saying, you know, if I really want to sleep over my friend's house, I have to go ask with them. Because if I'm there, the parent will say yes. If I'm not there, the parent will say no. I remember knowing that as a young kid.
Wow. I love it. And it obviously resonated with a boatload of folk. It really hit
home.
Well,
it was also funny. It was a funny picture. I can't take all of the credit for the popularity of my memes, because I know that sometimes I'll go with the caption that's maybe not so funny, but the picture's good, and it'll take off. So it's combo of the picture and the sentiment in the meme.
So now, you know, you've expanded your spectrum of wonderful things you do out there. You're a comedian, now an author. You've already established yourself as quite an Instagram celebrity. I think another thing, quite frankly, Tank, that, you know, I know it resonated with me, was your story. You know, you've got street creds. You know, you come from a tough place. And I think a lot of people out there get that. And, you know, if you kind of, you know, were born with the silver spoon in your mouth and life was wonderful and you never really had that level of pain and angst, I think most people kind of blow you off. But, you know, the fact that you've got the street creds, I think really means a lot. Do you get a lot of people kind of talking to you about that?
Yeah, my favorite messages to get from people are the ones where the whole reason I do this, my friend just sent me a statistic, and I don't know how accurate it is, but it seems about right. Something like kids laugh an average of 300 times a day, and adults laugh an average of 5 to 7 times a day, which is really sad. And the reason that I focus so much on laughter is because laughter displaces everything else. Like, you can't be laughing and thinking about your cable bill and how you're going to pay it. You can't be laughing and thinking about the fact that you don't look great in the mirror. It's just impossible. It's just for that moment. So the reason that I'm so hell-bent on making everybody laugh is just because I know what it feels like to be in a bad spot and to run into a friend or to watch, you know, a movie comes on television or you go see a stand-up comedy show, and for a second you forget about your problems because all of your anxiety and fears and worry have been displaced by laughter, which completely and totally brings you into the present moment almost more than anything else I've ever experienced. So, you know, I think that it's important to focus on that. Not like in an inappropriate way, but I personally don't think there's any situation where humor cannot help the situation, no matter how grave. As a matter of fact, the more grave a situation, the more I like to try and bring levity to it with humor, unless the other person has expressed, like, this is not the time or I'm not in the mood or whatever, then I kind of back off. But, yeah, that's where I'm at with that.
I love it. And, you know, part of my own medical work, my scientific work over at the National Institutes of Health has been looking at stress, right? And so what's really interesting, you have a choice because you cannot be joyful, laughing your behind off. At the same time, you're also feeling toxic stress. It just, you know, your brain can't do that. It's a choice. You're either going to be one place or the other. However long it lasts is whatever it is. Like you said, you could be escaping for 1 minute or 5 minutes or maybe an hour or whatever. But at the end of the day, you have a choice. And when you do laugh, you activate a whole domino effect in the body in terms of the more positive brain chemicals. And that, if anything, is a healing thing. So whatever's ailing you at that moment, whatever level of anxiety, depression, or whatever, you know, having a bit of a laugh and a smile on your face could be the beginning of a healing path, too. You just never know, you know? You just never know.
I'm kind of hearing that from you. Can you confirm something to me? I've heard this before, and I've actually used it in practice, but it's all anecdotal. So I've heard that, you know, your psychology could obviously influence your physiology, meaning if you're happy, you smile. But I've also heard that the pathways work in reverse, meaning if you smile long enough, you'll activate certain chemicals in the brain that will make you feel better. Is there any scientific evidence to that, or is that just all?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. And offline, I'll give you a boatload of data on this one. You know, it kind of gets folded under a very interesting little, you know, saying, and that is fake it until you become it.
Yeah.
Not fake it till you make it, but fake it till you become it. So you just keep smiling and smiling and smiling. The very act of smiling actually changes the connectivity and the interrelationships and interconnections upstairs. There's a whole communication system that's going on between the fight and flight part of the brain called the amygdala. So that's the, oh my God, and you know, you're running around and fearful and hypervigilant and freaked out and everything, versus another part of the brain where that's the reward center that's cranking out dopamine, the feel good, a neurotransmitter. And so all of a sudden, you know, you've got one overwhelming the other. They kind of have a convo up there in the brain, in your squash.
Sure.
And then all of a sudden, the reward center's winning out. And when that happens, then there's a third part of the brain that gets, you know, it's like they're knocking on the door. And that's actually the CEO of the brain, right behind your forehead. It's called the frontal lobe. And in there, that's where you make your big decisions. Right? Decision, strategize, organize, blah, blah, blah. And that's also, by the way, the place of the brain that gets hammered most with addiction, with impulsivity, and with sad moods like depression and angst and fear. Because what that does is it basically shuts down that CEO. So in answer to your question, heck yeah. Smile, smile until it becomes a piece of you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's incredible. I'm floored by the fact that that's actually true, backed up by data. I've heard it a million times before just from other people, but it's very interesting. This is actual empirical data and evidence based on that. That's crazy.
Oh my gosh, I'm giving you another meme. I just know I am. I'm like creating this thing, you know, for the brain and the whole gig. So speaking of doing some really cool stuff here, so you've got the book and you're also working on a one-man show that'll incorporate all of this. Tell me about that, because I know our Her podcast listeners are probably sitting at the edge of their chairs going, we want more of him. Where do we find him?
Yeah, maybe. That would be great if they were. If you are, thank you for taking an interest. But So the way I wrote the book was very unorthodox, and I feel very fortunate that I decided to do it in 2017, where if you have a little bit of, you know, courage and will, you can pretty much make anything happen. I didn't go with a big publisher. I just did it on my own with a very small publisher. I don't think I would have gotten picked up by a big publisher, and I don't think I would have had the creative license to do what I did. But basically, I journaled for about 10 years, and basically, I was just kind of working through stuff in my mind, writing down reminders for myself or notes on what I had learned as I had overcome each obstacle in my life. Not that I overcame things in one fell swoop, but it's like, okay, all right, a little, I call them the light bulb moments, which is not mine. I'm not taking credit for that, but I like that one the most. And, you know, oh, okay, maybe I should look at that this way. And then I write that down. And then, oh, that's what that means. I'm going to write that down. Or, you know, this experience influenced me this way or that way, or this person influenced me this way or that way. And I wrote down everything for 10 years, like anything good that passed through my mind that I didn't want to forget and I wanted to hang on to, I wrote down. So I took, you know, the thousands of notes that I had in my emails and in my notes app on my phone, and I got it down to like 500 or 600. Then we got it down to 300. Then we got it down to 207. And then we took the stories themselves and we distilled them down to like the very nature and principle of what it was about, because I didn't want to, if I learned a lesson or gleaned a principle from my experience with my self-esteem or self-image, I didn't want that to affect the way you view the principle and you apply it to your work life or your relationship or your family or anything. I wanted to take the principle out of the situation, no context, no story, only principle, because context is important, but it's not that important. And if the context is going to make you think that principle can't be used whatever way you want it to, then it really needs to go. So I wrote it that way. And what I want to do with the one-man show is just go in reverse and kind of contextualize all the principles in the book that I think are the most valuable. Not all of them, because that would be a really long one-man show. But I want to tell the story of before and after the light bulb moment and how it happened. And, my life is not, I'm not Tupac and I'm not Mike Tyson, but I think that my story is interesting in that in the beginning, it looked like I was not going to amount to much. And I mean, I would have traded places with anybody in the world in my early 20s, anybody. And now I wouldn't trade places with anybody, even The Rock. And I love The Rock. I would have traded places with the guy driving his plumbing truck around, waking up at 5 a.m. and working until 8 p.m. I just thought anybody had to have it better than me, anybody. And I don't feel that way anymore. And I want to tell that story of how I came to that.
So, oh my gosh, what's the timing? When do you think something like this might come to fruition?
I could see this happening within the next year, maybe a little bit sooner. I really want to do it right. I don't want to do it and then save some for the second show, because the way I feel is that if you don't nail the first one, you don't get a second one. So I really want to put everything I can into the first show.
I love it. Okay, so we're all crossing our fingers, and of course, I'll be the first person you call as soon as you know when this is happening, right? Say yes.
Yes.
There you go. Now, why is it that, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, Mario Lopez, Tony Hawk, Trevor Noah, and all of this, these amazing celebrities, why are they followers of yours? What are they getting out of you? What kind of, how are you speaking to them?
I think I'm just being honest, and I'm also, I'm being honest, I'm being authentic, and I'm not playing to the crowd. I'm not going for likes specifically. I'm not making jokes about blue humor. I'm not making jokes about being hungover or doing drugs. Like my humor is pretty wholesome, but my humor is just a reflection of who I am. Not that I'm like a good issues, but I don't do drugs. I don't drink. I don't gamble. I don't do a lot of things that really make people feel bad about themselves. I mean, I have my vices, but for the most part, my experiences as a father and as a husband and as an employee and a friend and a family member, I do, and I don't have a choice, and I wouldn't have it any other way, even if I did, but I don't have the choice to go live on the internet, meaning I think that when people start out, they take all of their life experience and they put it into a meme, and it's like, oh, that's funny, and then they're good for like 6 months to a year, but the likes are so addicting and the followers are so addicting that you put all of your time and energy into the internet to the point where you're not even out there living life anymore. You don't go hang out with your friends and family. You don't go to work because your job is to work on the internet, and you paint yourself into this mental corner where you don't have to go do anything else. So you just stay in your apartment or house and stay on the internet all day, and you lose that human experience, which is where all of my content comes from. So I'm out there living, working, parenting, being a husband, and that's where I pull my content from. So I haven't had, I haven't fallen prey to the trap of spending all of my time on the internet. So while these people are out there living also, all these celebrities, these guys have very full lives and they don't have a choice to go live on the internet all the time. I think maybe that's why they relate to it so much, is because it's just pulled from real life. It's pulled from, my experiences.
I love it. I this really, again, it's your street cred thing. Come from, seriously, I mean, at multiple levels. I think the word that's really starting to hit me about you is authentic.
Yeah.
You're authentic and you're delightfully, you know, in a place where, like, you have that complete disregard for the typical self-help convention. I think you have a typical disregard for a boatload of things, and which is why you have been so successful. You know, I mean, for instance, I don't get along with authority at all. You know, I just don't do authority. And I can smell the same thing coming from you in a big way. It's like, when people say think outside the box, I think you and I share something in common, and that is neither of us know where that box is. We just sort of go out there and,
Yeah, exactly.
What box? And that's why I think that you've created, kind of a universe of possibility that was restricted by the boxes. And that's why you're so much fun. You're relatable and you're authentic. And I think that's what really engaged me when I first read about you and looked at your work. I just had a huge smile on my face, saying, this is a cool dude. This is a totally cool dude. Got to know more about him and why he makes such really wild t-shirts. I'm still trying to figure out this. God is not a painkiller. Help me with that.
Oh boy. That was one of those things that I heard somebody say that just knocked me on my butt. It was so it means two things. One, it's obviously a little it's a little standoffish, and it's a little aggressive, but it's not meant to be, but that's how it comes across. So one way that it's interpreted is that I think people, and I'm not speaking about anybody specifically, I'm just talking about people in general, I think that when something bad happens in somebody's life, they refuse to feel pain about it. They refuse to feel anger, even though those are very appropriate reactions to certain situations. And they just say, oh, this is just God's will. Like, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But even if it is, you can still get angry that your son is sick or that your wife left you or that you got hit by a car or whatever. I've seen people really numb out their entire existence. Which, as you know, when you numb the pain, you also numb the joy. So if you're not willing to feel pain, you're probably not going to feel much joy either. So that's one way it was interpreted. But the real way that I mean it is God is not a pain killer, because pain equals growth, and God is not a growth killer. There are plenty of other painkillers that you can stun your growth with, like drugs and sex and food and money and all that kind of other stuff. But God, a spiritual relationship, should not be one of those things that is a painkiller. It should be a growth encourager.
I love that. And that's kind of where I thought you were going with that one. You know, I'm a triathlete, and I was just thinking,
wow.
last time I was in the water and things were getting a little rocky out there, you know, because you do a swim, bike, run. So the swim part is a wild and crazy time. And I remember calling upon God at one point when I went, oh, God, here comes another wave. And here I am just, you know, working really hard and really working it. I mean, it's a challenge. It's big. But, you know, God got folded into that as just part of the action, as like, okay, you know, but I know I got to do the work. I know I'm going to feel some pain. So dial it up and let's just get this show on the road. I thought of a lot of things when I saw that t-shirt, and it really, really resonated with me like you do. Oh my gosh. So everyone, I mean, we could do this for probably a day and a half. I mean, seriously, I want to make sure that everyone knows that we are talking to George Resch, but he prefers to be called Tank Sinatra. Yeah, man. And go to his website, which is TankSinatra.com. Yes, he does have blue eyes. And the title of his book is Happy is the New Rich. It is awesome, cool. Don't be a loser. Go and get it, for crying out loud. Just run on over to his website, and you can kind of really see what he's all about, because this guy is awesome. And I have a funny feeling, I'm just saying, I have a funny feeling we're going to be hearing a lot more from Tank Sinatra. So thank you, Tank, for being her episode.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for taking an interest in what I'm doing, and I want to thank your listeners for making it this far, if they did make it this far, and I hope that I'm able to connect with them and you in different ways on different levels.
You already did. Done. Complete. All right. And everyone out there, remember to catch every episode of Her. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And just take a few seconds and rate and review our podcast, because, honey, I read these things and love it, love it, love it. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Follow me on Twitter at PamPeekMD. And you could also check out our Her show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes.